Hi, it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. We have such a special and extraordinary show for you here today. When we created Unlimited Life, it was our deepest desire to bring to you the very best people in their field, the very top, the wisest, the most knowledgeable, and those that are really, truly the experts in bringing you the keys, the tools, and the techniques to be able to live an unbridled and unlimited life. And today's guest is so exceptional. Today we are just speaking with Anil Gupta, and Anil is an electrifying catalyst for profound change. He is someone who has devoted his life to helping people rise out of pain and blockage into overflowing abundance, happiness, and fulfillment. He truly has this incredible gift for identifying blocks and patterns that are keeping a person stuck, and he uses his advanced intuitive gifts to reconnect people with their spirit, their truth, and their life purpose. And Neil is amazing. He wrote a book called Immediate Happiness that was an instant success, and it's funny because on the cover of the book it says, "Be happy now." And he has this amazing technique in which he can share with you and work with you and show you how you too can be happy in just a matter of minutes. And so I'm thrilled for today's guest as we proudly welcome Anil Gupta. Anil, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm excited to be of service to you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure having you here. I mean, you are an author, you are a coach, you work with people all over the world, you're a television and radio and international guest, and I know that your time is so valuable and so precious, and it's just wondrous for us to have you here today. And I love the subject of happiness, and I love starting the year with happiness, because as we all make our New Year's resolutions and we say we want more money or more health or a better relationship or a relationship at all, and we create these huge long lists of the things that we would like and the things that in our life that we would also like to erase or bury or dissipate. I've never really had somebody come to me that said on their list for their New Year's resolutions was happiness, but yet when you ask people what they want most, it seems to be at the very top of their list.
Yes, and as human beings, actually what we're seeking is a feeling. So that people want the feeling of being happy. They want the feeling of being in a great relationship. They want the feeling of having money in the bank. So as human beings, we are feeling-making machines. So we'll do anything for a feeling.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question. I always ask on this show, the did you know? When you were 6 or 7 or 8 years old, when you were a small child, did you always have a gift for helping people and connecting people? Or was that something that later in life was just this epiphany that you were able to reach out and share your wisdom in a different way?
I didn't think I had a gift as such, but I thought I knew that I was destined for greatness in some way or other. But I didn't know what or how or where.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a strange experience.
I love that when you say that you were destined for greatness. And so what does that feel like, that knowing this?
I felt it when I was younger, but then as I got older, that feeling disappeared because all sorts of things are taken up. You know, as youngsters, we have more time to reflect and think, and we have more time to just, let our minds wander. So then we can experience things that we could never experience if our minds are cluttered. So when your mind gets cluttered, we can't experience these great magical moments.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. I was looking at your book, and I was just, some of the things that people share, they say that it gives you inner peace and that it was a profound experience working with you, or that their life is more fulfilling. And those are sweeping things to have inner peace or a life change or insight or fulfillment. And so what do you think it is about your work that touches people on such a deep level?
Now, I have the ability and the gift to get into someone else's world, see things as they see them, but see things much clearer. So once you have clarity, you can create focus. From focus, you can have action. From action, you can get results. And ultimately, we're all looking for a success fulfillment. So, but it all has to start with clarity. And you cannot be clear. You cannot have clarity without awareness. So it's the awareness we all need to work on.
And awareness is, when you think about awareness to our world, awareness to our life, is that the starting point for happy? First, let me ask you, is happy possible? Can anybody be happy? And then is awareness where somebody begins?
Happiness is easy. You cannot be happy, you cannot be fulfilled, you cannot be in love without awareness. So if you work on awareness, you work on the rest of your life. So awareness is the fundamental discipline we need to work on for immediate results.
Okay, and so when somebody is sad or somebody is frustrated or somebody has just gone bankrupt or they lost a spouse or a loved one, or they, how do they climb back up to happy? I mean, when somebody goes down a hole or they spiral into darkness, what's the first rung?
The first thing, and I've been through this myself, is to be grateful. Look at areas of your life that you could be grateful. And they don't have to be big things. You could be grateful for having hands, legs, feet, a nose, eyes, ears. You could be grateful for freedom. But the quality of your life is dependent on the amount and depth of gratitude that you can have in that life. I was suicidal 6 years ago, and I had no gratitude. I was in my depths of despair. But once the gratitude started to come through, I began to have hope, and from hope, anything is possible.
That's so beautiful. I remember that Julia Butterfly Hill, who was one of the women that lived in the trees when they were cutting down in Ecuador and, you know, for the rainforest, and she actually watched one of the people cut a tree, and the tree came down on one of the young advocates. This very young man, and from the tree, from living up there, she was able to witness this. And she said she was just rocking in this fetal position. And that in that moment, she said, Julia, you know, that you have to have hope. Because even if you're the only person in the world that has hope, hope exists on the planet. And it's something that stayed with me always. So I love the idea of hope. Can you talk a little bit about more about what that looks like?
Again, hope is a feeling, and once you have that feeling, it energizes you and vitalizes you, and that's what you need. You need to start, and that hope changes your focus. So you are what you focus on. So if you focus on life is terrible, this is not working, that's not working, that's what you're going to get. But if you start focusing on hope, you get a direction that you can go in, which will be ultimately very fulfilling.
That's just, it's so beautiful to think about. When you talk about 6 years ago that you were suicidal, I don't want to just run past that. And I know that it might not be an easy thing to talk about, but certainly I'm sure our listeners, if they've not been in that exact position, I'm sure many of them have, but that others just felt just so desperate or so destitute, or just the fact that there was nothing left or there were no other solutions to protect themselves or their family or their life. And so how did you go from feeling suicidal or feeling so lost or ready to give up to being able to flip to the other side after this incredible world that you call immediate happiness?
The secret was I was focusing on myself. I was thinking, oh, woe with me. I've lost this. My identity has been destroyed. What will other people think? I'm a failure. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm so stupid. But then I helped someone, and all of a sudden I felt better. I thought, hang on, what's going on here? Then I helped someone else, and I felt even better. So I realized in that moment, it's not about me. It's about the difference I make. It's not what happens in life, but who am I going to become in that moment?
Wow. And so was there... fear? Mm-hmm. Was there, I mean, at what point did you say, if I just keep moving forward or take the next step or keep helping the next person, or was there some sort of switch for those that are listening that you can offer a life ring or a raft to and say, here, there, you know, there is a way to stay afloat, and not only can you stay afloat, but you can actually get to shore and have this grand life.
Well, I was scrambling at that time, so I really didn't have many thought processes, but I knew the feeling I was experiencing, but it just happened. I couldn't explain. It was a methodology. It just happened. You know, like something dropped out of the sky, and I picked it up, and I looked at it, and thought, well, that's interesting. And that took me away from the pain, and that distracted me. You know, it's like a kid. If a kid is crying and you give it some ice cream, it's easily distracted, and that's what I was like. I was just like a little kid. But all of a sudden, my focus was changed. My eyes were diverted away from the pain towards some pleasure, and I thought, wow, this is interesting.
And I remember that you shared with me once, I believe, on our Passionate Living show, about something that your wife said, too, that profoundly had an incredible effect on you.
Yeah, she said, honey, I'm glad you lost it all. And I know my wife loves me. And I said, well, why would you say that? She said, look, you can't sleep at night. You're a nervous wreck. Every time you leave the house, I don't know if you're going to come back. I don't know if you're going to have a heart attack. Now you don't have to worry about that stuff. And I thought, wow, you know what? You're right. You know, that's the type of logic I can respond to. But then she said, you made one big mistake. I thought, here we go. She's going to hold this against me for the rest of my life. She said, honey, you didn't lose it all. You still have me. You still have the kids. All we want to do is be with you. Wherever you go, we'll sleep in the street if we have to, as long as we're with you. And I was living in a world that, why would she do that? You know, I did everything for her, but that's not what she wanted. So here's a great tip to the listeners. Ask your partner, what is it you want? What would make you happy? You'll be surprised what they'll tell you.
It's just so sweet, and I would hope that every relationship, as we talk about hope, could have somebody with so much support and so much love. And I know that in your book, you even have a chapter on what is love.
Yeah, you know, if you change the definition of something, you change your life. So in my coaching programs, I ask people, what does love mean to you? And they give us a reel of things that have to be performed or fulfilled for them to feel love. But love is very simple. Love is acceptance. That's it. It's simple. It's powerful. It's the law of the universe.
And so when you had this love from your wife and this support from your wife, at what point did you say, not only is this working, this gratitude, this doing for others, but what spurred you to write the book and to share this message and to coach and to teach others the way that you do now?
A lot of people think knowledge is power, but it's not. Knowledge is not power unless you implement. So I knew what to do. I knew how to change my state. I knew that I had to change my thinking, but I just could not do it. And I thought, there must be other people in the same position. So I started just thinking about ways to get immediate results. So then I started writing it down, and then ultimately the book happened. So it's really just a manual. It's not a book. It's a manual. Practical things you can do that will make an immediate impact in your life that you can share with your friends, with your family, with your loved ones. All my knowledge is for you to share. You know, if you see something, just share it. I have no problem with that.
And when you talk about awareness, I know that there's also a section in the book where you talk about how you acquire awareness. And so I think that's a great lesson to teach our audience, because it's one thing to say be aware, you know, be aware of your surroundings, be aware of bears in the woods, be aware of whatever that is. But how does one acquire, you know, awareness? Like a baby looks up and all of a sudden they see their hands or their feet or there is a floor. But is that something that we learn to do, or is that something that's innate?
Well, I think as we're growing up, our level of awareness increases a lot. But then it's drummed out of us. You know, we're told to sit down, be quiet, and you put your hand up when you want to say something. So awareness is a muscle. So if you exercise that muscle, your level of awareness goes up. So what happens is, as your level of awareness goes up, you become aware of being aware. So here's a simple tool to increase the level of awareness in your life. So if you get a handkerchief, tie a knot in it, put it in your pocket. Every time you notice that handkerchief, that will remind you to be aware. You can put a post-it note on your computer screen with the words, hey, be aware. You could have your phone ring every 3 hours just to remind you, hey, be aware. I have a wristband on my wrist which says the word awareness. Every time I look at it, say, hey, you've got to be aware. So as you become aware, you become that muscle becomes stronger and stronger. So then you become aware that you're being aware. So that awareness allows you not to be so judgmental. It allows you to be an observer of life rather than be a reactor of life.
It's ironic that you say that because I'm in a master class, and the question yesterday morning that the teacher had asked was, what is beauty? And everybody had a different concept and idea of what beauty was to them. But the very first thing that I thought of was a beautiful sunset or an incredible sky with just these views, these kaleidoscope views. And that when I'm driving or when I'm walking or when I all of a sudden I see this amazing, glorious, breathtaking, sweeping sky, I pause in that moment, and I become incredibly grateful and incredibly aware of life and everything that's around me. And I just take that second or that minute to say thank you and to be there. And so I love the fact that it can be anything, that you're saying that you can put a post-it or tie the knot or have the wristlet or something in your life that in those moments just stops you, gives you pause, and brings you back to the center and the core of who you are.
You know, beauty is a decision. So I'm looking at a paperclip here. And there's great beauty in it. You know, the functionality, the design, the angles, the curvatures, it's beautiful. But it's my choice to decide whether it's beautiful or not. It's my choice to give it time and attention, and the ability to be able to do that will increase the quality of your life because you can see beauty in everything. So, Nicole, just have a look at your hand.
Okay.
How beautiful is that hand?
Yes.
Isn't it?
It really is, yes.
Yeah, it's served you for many years. It's never let you down. It's there, constantly serving you, looking after you. It feeds you. It nurtures you. It guides you. We can create beauty in anything, in any way that we want to. Again, it's just a muscle. It's just a muscle. You know, I take great pleasure, immense pleasure, in seeing other people being happy. That's beautiful. Anyone can do it.
Mm-hmm. As you speak about hands, I hadn't thought about this in years, but I grew up in a very small city, in a very small town. And we would walk to school the way that kids used to walk to school. And in the windows of several houses along the way to school were hands. There would just be a picture of a hand. And our city implemented a helping hand program, and they were the helping hand houses. And if a child needed anything, they can go ring the bell and knock on the door of a house that had a hand, and those people would help you.
Wow.
And so if you skinned your knee, if you sneezed, if you whatever. And so it was a wonderful way to live, to know that along the way and on your path, there were all these helping hands.
Wow, that is so beautiful.
And so you just sparked that memory in something in my life. And I just love that feeling of safety and security. And it just always gave me just a sense of peace just to see those hands. Are really pretty amazing. And so when people come to you, Anil, when do they come to you? Do they come to you when they're joyous and happy and they want grander bliss and euphoria and they want that spiraling out of control excitement and enthusiasm? Or do people come to you for coaching when they're stuck? or when they're hurt or they're wounded or they're despondent? Or at what point should somebody reach out to you in your work?
You know, they normally come to me as a last resort. They've been to counselors, they've been to coaches, and they just want results, fast results. So I'm really the person of last resort.
And I know that you have a 3-minute technique that you can actually help people. I love on your book where it says immediate happiness, but the other part that I love says be happy now. Practical steps with immediate proven results. And so can we step into happiness? Is it something like a shadow that you can step into and over here I'm happy and over here I'm not?
It is. It is. And there are practical ways to distinguish that. See, being happy and being unhappy is a doing. So you can easily be doing unhappiness just by what you focus on, by how much energy you put into it. And you could just as easily be happy by putting the same amount of energy. It's just which muscle have you been feeding? Which muscle have you been exercising? And for a lot of people, they've been exercising the wrong muscle. But that they get great comfort for being comfortable. So the secret is you have to become comfortable about being uncomfortable, and then you have to be uncomfortable about being comfortable.
That's a great line.
I like that.
I like that very much. That's something I love to put on our website. You have to be uncomfortable, be comfortable, uncomfortable, and being uncomfortable. But it's true.
Yeah, it's human beings. We love to be comfortable. And what I see is that if you're not happy in your life and people empathize with you, you get some of your needs met. You know, people spend time with you, they give you love, they give you attention, and you think, wow, this is great. I might as well stay like this.
That's incredible. And what's the difference between happiness and joy?
Happiness is external, joy is internal. Motivation is external, inspiration is internal. So happiness and motivation is temporary, whereas joy, bliss, inspiration is much longer lasting and a much deeper level.
Can somebody on the outside make you happy? Like, can a partner or a mate make you happy, or a job make you happy, or a new refrigerator or a car? Can things make you happy?
Oh, yeah, but that, again, that's temporary.
I just love the idea of this. And what about kids and teenagers? Like, a child does not get what they want, and they scream to the high heavens, and they bang their little hands and feet on the floor, or they are bawling and bawling. Or a teenager that yells, I hate you, and they slam the door. How do you work with children and teenagers?
It's really very easy. See, the problem is this. The adults do not get into the world of the teenager. The adults stay in the world of the adult. So the teenager is thinking, they don't understand me, they don't care about me, they don't love me. If they did, they would understand. So part of my coaching is, look, parents, get into the world of the teenager. What's it like being a teenager? Have you asked him, what's your favorite music? Who's your best friend? What do you love to do? What can I do to make you feel more loved? What can I do to make you feel more happy? What can I let go of that's upsetting you? We never have these problems with our kids. Never a tantrum, never an upset, never a bad word. Because we constantly coached them and guided them.
Do you think it's different now that they used to have a village to raise a child? And there were people around, there were aunts and uncles and grandparents and neighbors. And when kids had questions, there were people to go to. And now when a child has a question, they go to Google.
Well, you know, I think the problem lies in the fact that as parents, we make our children the main priority. And I strongly feel that we should make our partners the main priority. And if you make your partner your number one priority, they will never leave you. The child will see that the parents are making each other more important, so they don't get upset so much as if they were made more important, then all of a sudden they're not made as important. So when they have their relationships, they'll do the same thing.
That's such great advice because it happens all the time. And then all of a sudden the relationship's in jeopardy and then the couple faces on each, you know, puts the focus back on each other. And then the kids feel slighted and the kids go crazy. And what about when they're little kids, when they're toddlers and they want something and they, you know, want that latest, greatest toy and from Santa or from whoever, and that becomes the most important thing in the world, or that cookie or that treat for their happiness.
Yeah, I see this all the time. The parents are always seeking to please the child by, you know, taking them on a ride or giving them gifts or whatever. There's no need to do that. The child will be happy whatever is, whatever there is to play with. You don't have to buy them special gifts. You don't have to entertain them. You don't have to give them an iPad. Just be with them, be present with them, be playful with them, listen to them. You don't need to spend all that money on gifts, because what will happen is the child is expecting a gift, a gratification. Then they'll want something else, and they'll want something else. And then they're looking for another high, another high, another high. Then eventually, you know, what else can you give them? You can give them a car, you can give them a house. Then what? Drugs, alcohol. It happens all the time. But the secret is to be with your kids. Be careful who they spend time with. Know who their friends are. Know what they're thinking. Know what they're doing. Just be there with them.
And how about for you with your kids? Is there something that you say or do that allows them to know it's safe to come to you and to talk to you?
There's a beautiful exercise I'll share with your readers. So we would sit around a table and I would ask my wife, honey, what have you done today that you haven't been thanked or acknowledged for? So she may say, I cooked this beautiful meal. So we would thank her. My son would say, I got this great grade. You ignored me. I would fix that. Then I would say, what was an act of kindness you saw today? What was an act of kindness you performed today? What are you grateful for? What did you see today? What did you notice today? And is there anything on your mind that you'd like to talk over? So I would lead the first day. My wife would lead the second day. Then my son, who was 8 at the time, would lead the third day. And then my daughter would lead the fourth day. She was 6. At the beginning, it's a little bit awkward for the kids. But after a while, they get used to it, and they make up their own questions. So imagine an 8-year-old is walking around school. He's looking for acts of kindness to perform. He's looking for acts of kindness to see. He's looking for gratefulness. And he's just seeing, what does he see? What does he notice? So one day, my son said to me, hey, Dad, you lied to me. I thought, wow, I'm surprised about that, son. I have a very high level of integrity. Explain to me. He said, well, Dad, the other day you said you would come and play with me in 15 minutes, but you took an hour. Wow. He was right. And I said, son, you're right. I lied to you. It was not my intention. Please accept my apologies. It won't happen again.
Wow.
It's such a beautiful thing, because my kids can come up to me and say anything to me. We have great discussions. But the level of awareness increased. Their leadership qualities increased. Their self-expression increased. Their muscle for kindness increased. Their muscle for gratitude increased. I'll tell you one more beautiful thing my son said to me. He said, Dad, you know, something I noticed today when you picked me up. Some of the parents don't hug and kiss their kids. You know, if an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old notices that, can you imagine what it's like being that 9-year-old? Imagine what it's like being that parent. You know, I've often heard people say, kids say, Dad, don't kiss me in front of the parents, the other parents.
And what do you think causes that? People not to be kissed publicly or held publicly, or fear of what others would think. Why do you think that happens?
But that's what it is. You know, we're all concerned about what other people think. And I said to my son and daughter, I said, son, even if you're 40 years old, I will still hug you and I'll still kiss you. And I don't care what other people think. I said, Dad, what will they say? I said, look, they may say something to you, but this is what you can say back to them. So my father loves me. That's why he does that. I'm so blessed.
I love your work.
As human beings, we're meaning-making machines. So as kids, we'll make up something. Oh, if my dad kisses me, It means that I'm not mature, or it means that I'm not cool. You see, that's the problem. We need to stem all of this so that you don't have teenage problems. We've never had that issue, never had that issue.
This is so brilliant. I absolutely, absolutely love your work. And I know that you were saying that you've actually created a happiness meter or happiness test that you can test your level of happiness.
Well, you get a score. You know, we don't know how happy we are. But if you fill in this 3-minute questionnaire, 25 questions, just fill it in honestly, you'll get a happiness score, how happy you are. And plus, it'll tell you areas of your life that you need to work on. So if you worked on those areas of your life, your score would go up. How cool would that be? So imagine a married couple do this test. One scores 60, one scores 80. That tells you something's wrong there somewhere. And then they know the areas that they can work on, so that will save their marriage.
That's just brilliant. And how does somebody take the happiness test?
It's just very easy. Go to this website, myhappinessscore.com.
Okay, there's 25 questions. And then let's say you got a 3 or a 17. Do you throw yourself into the river, or does it say this is how you can, you know, raise your score in these particular areas?
Oh, if you got a 10 or a 20, you should be cheerful about it, because the score can only go up. So to go from 20 to 40 is very easy. From 40 to 60 is very easy. All you have to do is just listen to the advice I give you on how to raise your score. It's very simple, very powerful, very practical.
Phenomenal. I love that. And when you're talking about teenagers and you're talking about your kids, and I know that you also have a daughter, and there is a chapter I seem to remember in your book on dating, the dating facade. And so can you talk for a minute on that, and also what advice you would give to a young person who's beginning to date, or even as an adult as we date?
Well, the number one problem about dating, the reason why people have bad relationships, is they date the wrong person for the wrong reason. So the most important thing is to pick your partner. Like just as you would do an employee, you have to pick carefully. But people choose partners for the wrong reason. Oh, she looks attractive, or he's, you know, in the hockey team, or he's in the football team, and, you know, he's looking good and she's looking good. And then what happens is he will act up. She will act up to impress the other person. So he'll do anything for her. She'll do anything for him. So they'll date. Everything's great. Then they get married. So then he says, well, you know, I don't have to do that stuff anymore. And she'll say, well, you know, I don't have to do that stuff anymore. So she lets down her guards. So she becomes who she really is, and he becomes who he really is. And then all of a sudden he says, well, you're not the woman I married. And she'll say, well, you're not the man I married. And that's how marriages break up. But how cool would it be if you knew exactly the type of person that would be perfect for you before you even dated? I can guarantee you a 90 to 95% rate that if you date the way I tell you to date, that person will likely to be your next partner for life.
Okay, so how does that work? Now we've got all these questions. You should see the screen in you.
it's clarity. You need clarity on you. But the number one thing, Nicole, and this is the hard part, you have to work on yourself first. You have to become a stronger, healthier, more vibrant, more caring, more joyous, more forgiving, more gentler person. You have to let go of the past. You have to let go of the trauma. Because I remember talking to my daughter, and my kids weren't allowed to date until at least 18, 19. And I would ask my daughter, I'd say, honey, you know, what's it like, you know, when your friends date? Said, Dad, at the beginning, it's amazing. They're in love. They're holding hands. They're kissing. Everything's great. But then I said, what happens? And I said, well, Dad, when they break up, I can't believe how bad they are towards each other. And I said, honey, what would happen if you had 6 or 7 of those relationships? I said, Dad, I can't believe that. I mean, you and Mum only met each other for 3 times and you got married. I can't imagine what it would be like. So that's what happens. Once you've dated 3, 4, 5, 6 people, you get very wary. You get jaded. You get, you know, disillusioned. Whereas if you chose carefully at the beginning and you had clarity and you used your mind instead of your heart, you thought it out, you would be in a different place. You'd be so much more joyful, so much more playful, so much more happier.
Okay, but people are asking here, so don't you think, they're saying that, don't you think that they would know what they want? Like that instinctually they think that they know what they want?
No, you don't know what you want because you haven't thought about it. It's in that moment you make that decision. And a lot of the decisions are based on fear. I don't want to be left alone. I don't want a man like I had last time. So you'll go opposite direction. Yeah? So if you thought about it, you would get so much more clarity.
That people are looking for?
Say that again?
It's three things that people are looking for to find a mate. Each person has three things.
Well, I ask them to write down the four musts that they have to have in their relationships. Okay, so for example, that my partner has to be loving. Okay. He has to be, let me just get some previous coaching clients. I'll tell you what they wrote.
This is great. We've got so many happy people here.
Okay. So
I'm trying to phrase everybody's questions. So this
client here said, I want someone who's loving, honest, healthily passionate, and a great communicator. The next person said, I want someone who's loving, grounded, has integrity, and is happy. Let's see what else they wrote. Okay, next one wrote, I want someone who has integrity, loving, inspiring, and contributing. I want someone who's loving, respectful, playful, centered. I've got integrity, grounded, passionate, loving. So can you see that the most common word is loving? If you found someone loving, that is a major part of the relationship.
It seems so simple, but yet most people don't even put that on their list.
Because, you know, the thing is they're based on fear. They don't want to be left alone. Or they'll get into a relationship, realize it's the wrong one, but are fearful of getting out of it, thinking that they can change the partner. If you start thinking you can change the partner, it's not going to happen.
I just love this information. You know, this is brilliant. People are going crazy here. And so when you say somebody loving, they're asking about writing faithful or committed, or do people really want faithful or commitment, or is that just fear? It's really these other things that they want, which is the inspiration or the happiness or the...
It depends on the person. You know, people have different values. So when I got married, I met my wife for three times, half an hour each, and I asked her four questions. Number one was, do you speak the native language? Because I didn't speak it. Two, do you eat meat? Because I wanted someone who ate meat. I didn't want some veggie lover to push me around. Okay. Three, I asked my wife, prospective wife, would you be willing to live with my parents? Because that would tell me how loving she was. And four, I said, the question was, do you love children? Not do you like children, do you love children? I should have asked, can you cook? Because she didn't know how to cook, but that was my bad.
That's so fabulous.
And, you know, we met three times. I've been married 26 years. And in those times, I didn't want a beautiful wife because I thought a beautiful wife would lose her looks and then she'd change. But I was so wrong because, you know, when I got married, every time I saw my wife, she'd have her hair, you know, messed up or whatever. I don't know why. But when we got married, I thought, oh, my God, what have I done? She's so gorgeous. But you see how the past can determine how you act and respond. So I had a feeling that beautiful women were fickle, but I got it all wrong.
I love this. This is just the most beautiful, precious information. I might say that a lot, but I really do enjoy this information, and I could see the people that are, you know, listening, all the widespread audience here. I wish you could see all the, from all over the world, these questions that we have coming in on these relationships. And so let's say you've been married 3, 4, or 5 times. Because that's one of the questions here is if you've had multiple marriages or multiple landmines, wrong relationships, I think it said. And so how do you know that this one is going to work? So it's about asking the right questions before you move forward again, or not just eliminating all the things that didn't work?
So can we do a live call?
I'm trying to unleash them right now, but we're having trouble with that, but people are typing in like crazy. I'm trying to do the best I can for sharing their information. So they're asking if they stepped on landmines, that's what it said, or if their world has blown apart several times. How do you eliminate the things that you know aren't going to work, or do you look for something new now or in a different way?
Well, the first thing you have to do is to work on yourself. You have to clean up. You have to clean up the past. You have to forgive the bad relationships, the people who've hurt you. Because if you don't forgive, it's only going to go into the next relationship. And then as human beings, what will happen is you will sabotage the next relationship, because as human beings, we love to be right. And a lot of people love to be right about being right. So, but if they've already forgiven, they have a clean slate, they can go into a relationship without any past, without any pain, without any feelings that this is not going to work.
Just genius. Absolutely genius. I love that as now. I'm hearing myself back, which is kind of sexy and wonderful in the process. There you go. And so, Anil, and how does it work with people that are coming to you for businesses or a company? Because I know that you coach people all over the world, but that you also coach corporations.
You know, the way I teach is really in line with the fundamental laws of the universe. Again, in business, you have to bring clarity to the situation via awareness. But if you're not happy at home, the tendency is that you're not going to be happy at work. And the tendency is you're going to compensate somewhere to get your happiness and joy. So that can take many forms. It could be that you overwork, you overdrink, or you spend time away from home, or whatever it is. But although you could have that financial success, you don't have that fulfillment. So awareness gives you clarity. And if you have clarity in your business, not only will you earn more money, but the quality of that earnings will be increased, and the quality of the joy that comes into your life will be increased.
That's a great answer. There are all sorts of partnerships, from coaching a company, a corporation, somebody independent, just starting a business with a vision or a dream, or even if it's your life partner or your mate, and how you work together in those situations.
Yeah, I do a lot of conflict resolution, because in partnerships, one partner feels that they're doing more than the other, or the other partner's not contributing enough. And if you have a conflict in that manner, it can affect the whole business. The whole team can be affected. So we use many practical strategies that can help people get clarity.
And I also love, you had a section in your book, if I seem to remember, about being right. And I remember when I was a small child that my father, when we were learning to cross the street, and my father would tell me that pedestrians had the right of way, which in the state that I grew up, you know, when you stepped off the sidewalk, cars were supposed to stop for you. And so he would say pedestrians have the right of way, but that you also have to look for cars, because you may be right, but you could also be dead. You know, you also have to watch for moving vehicles, and that you don't always have to be right. Like you're saying, you just have to be aware and smart. And so I'm sure in partnerships and marriages and business partnerships, and anytime that there is a board of directors or many owners of a business, that somebody wants to be right. How do you talk somebody through that need to be right?
So you can't stop that need to be right, but you can increase the awareness. So there's several things we can do. But the number one thing is you have to throw awareness at it. Then I would ask them a question. What is the cost to you of being this way? well, you know, it's costing me my relationship, it's costing me my self-expression, my happiness, my joy. And I said, look, is that really what you want? What is the outcome you want from all of this? Oh, then all of a sudden they get that clarity. But we can't stop ourselves from being right. You know, we'll have an argument and then, you know, we'll carry on being right. Then at the end of it, say, well, I don't know what we were arguing about, but I wanted to be right. But if you can just have that awareness that you can ask yourself better questions, the quality of your life is dependent on the quality of the questions you ask yourself. So ask yourself, what is this costing me? Am I being right here? What would happen if I gave this up? What is it I can do to change this situation? And then all of a sudden you say, well, you know what? It's not that important. And then when you apologize, the other person inevitably apologizes. You know what? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. No, no, it wasn't your fault. It's my fault too. But we get reactive instead of responsive. You know the difference between those two, don't you?
I do, but I'd love you to share it for the audience because I would love your definition if you don't mind sharing.
So when you react to something, it's normally the wrong response. It's an immediate knee-jerk reaction. But if you respond to something, it's normally thought out. You look at the situation, then you make a response according to what the need is. So just have a look. When are you reacting? If your child, teenager comes in upset, do you react or do you respond to, oh, honey, I see you're upset. Oh, sit down, you know. Tell me what the matter is, as opposed to getting upset with him. So it's important to have that awareness. That's, again, the master discipline in every part of your life.
Okay, so then there's another aspect to that I know that you spoke about, which was patience.
Patience, yeah. This is one of my favorite sentences. Infinite patience produces immediate results. So can I share an experience in my life?
Infinite patience. Yes, please. Say that one more time.
So, for example, as an Indian, we're all very keen for our children to get great grades. But not only do we want to get great grades, but we want to be in the top echelons. So I would send my son to a particular school and I would give him extra tutorial lessons, extra coaching, extra homework. And I used to think, this is so painful for me because, you know, he's not enjoying it. I'm not enjoying him not enjoying it. Then one day I said, you know, son, don't worry about it. Because I was, to be honest, I was more concerned about how I looked to my fellow friends and relatives. I didn't want my son to get bad grades and make me look bad. Then I thought, oh, my goodness, what am I doing to him? So I thought, you know what, I'm going to let this go. So I stopped the coaching, stopped the tutorials, everything. Then all of a sudden, he blossomed. But if I'd have known at the beginning that he would blossom anyway, I could have had that immediate peace then, rather than having to worry about it. So if you have infinite patience, knowing that everything will be well in the end, and if it's not well, it's not the end, you can be peaceful now.
That's a beautiful statement, Anil. That's the first time I've ever heard something like that. So everything will be well in the end, and if it's not well, it's not the end?
Yeah.
That's a phrase that people should just write everywhere. What a wonderful way to live by. Yes. I mean, that's astonishing. And that takes care of stress. That takes care of any aggravation. That takes care of fear. That takes care of risk. That takes care of any setbacks. Any reflection on oneself, as you're saying, just to have that faith and trust and knowingness.
Beautiful.
What a beautiful way to live. That's really just fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. That's my favorite line of all of our shows. It's just fabulous. And then somebody is typing in here, I think it said it's like 10 times with lots of explanation points, forgiveness. I guess they want you to talk about forgiveness.
So forgiveness is the express pathway to freedom. Let me repeat that. This is so powerful. Forgiveness is the express pathway to freedom. The quality of your life is dependent on the quality and depth of the forgiveness you're able to extend in your life. And normally you may have to forgive yourself.
Just, I love these coins. I love the way that you teach. I love the tapestry in which everything is woven together. It's just such beautiful information and something that immediately you feel, you relish. It's like marinating in a tub of truth.
I love that. That's so cool. Marinating
so
in a tub of truth.
That's exactly what it feels like as you say it to me. It's wonderful. And how do people find you and your work and work with you?
The best way is through the website, immediatehappiness.com. And if you want a strategy session, if you just go to the website, there's a button there, and then we can do a strategy call. My results are guaranteed. They're immediate. They're very powerful. They're very long-lasting. And there's a lot of free content on the site too. Also, take the myhappinessscore.com questionnaire. That will give you guidelines on how to get to a higher level at a faster rate.
Wonderful. And as people are now excited to jump into this, then I want to talk about another word and chapter in your book, which is expectation.
Yeah, expectations will always lead to upsets. When you expect a certain outcome, this is what happens with our children. We expect them to behave in a certain way, and when they don't, we get upset. So as parents, we have filters. We have a filter for our boss. We have a filter for our parents. We have a filter for our mother and a different filter for our father. We have a different filter for our kids. So when you look at your kids, you have that filter. And normally the filter is, oh, They're loud, they're obnoxious, they're disrespectful. And then when you have that expectation that they be that way, you want to be right. So anything that happens, you confirm it. But what would happen if you remove that filter? You would get to see what really is. And then you don't have to have that judgment. You don't have to have that expectation. You can respond as opposed to react.
Wow. Just thinking about that, that we all have expectations. You know, you say, okay, I'm going to be happy now. I'm going to be happy now and make that decision to do that. Just having that expectation, how that can wreak havoc with your life. Instead of, as you're saying, the same as that all will be well. Having that trust and that faith and that gratitude and the knowingness and the allowingness of that magic to unfold.
Yep.
And one of the things that I think I loved, I mean, there's so much about your work that I'm just absolutely just so drawn to, but something that I really hadn't stopped to think about before is you talk about the people that you surround yourself with. And I know that they say, like, the 10 people you surround yourself with, that's financially where you put yourself into wealth or into health, or, but can you talk for a second about the effect or affect of the people that you surround yourself with?
Because this is particularly important with your children. We would always know who our children's parents were, and we would always know who our children's friends were. It's important to know who they hang out with. It's important to know how much time they spend with these people, because all you need is one bad influence, and that can destroy everything that you've done with that child. So who you spend time with is who you become. Look at your friends, and this is a great exercise. If you write down all your friends' names, and next to them, write down how many hours a week you spent to them, and next to that, write down the grade you would give them. Grade A would be their totally inspiring, helpful, caring, loving people. Grade 2 or grade B would be that they're kind and generous, but you know, you can take them or leave them. And grade C would be, you know, people who drag energy and vitality out of you. Make sure you only spend time with A's and B's. And with the C's, you can either lift them up to a B or an A or let them go. Because if you give them empathy, they'll stay in that world. So if someone was upset and they had a big issue in their life, I would bring them up. And if I couldn't bring them up, I wouldn't spend any time with them because it's draining, it's painful.
And what about people that do drain your energy? But if you were to look at them from the outside, as you talk about looking at somebody from an outside window, they seem like caring, loving, kind, successful, happy, wonderful people. But yet, when you're around them, you feel their need totally drains on you or your life. Is there a way to still be able to separate yourself, even though you there's nothing wrong with them? Do you know what I'm saying? Or that you still see them as being wonderfully good people?
It's not that they're what you can do is just ask better questions. Instead of empathizing with them, divert their attention. Ask them what was great about today. What are you grateful for? What's magical? What are they passionate about? What can they do to, together that will create a great feeling? So, people get comfortable. So unknowingly, they may become comfortable in a particular way of being. But if you can just change that for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, that muscle gets developed. And as you spend more and more time doing that, it gets developed stronger and stronger. But if for some reason that muscle is not developed and they stay in that world, you don't have to cut them out completely, but just spend less time with them. Because, you have a duty to your family to be strong, powerful, caring, loving. And by you spending time with people or not, you're depriving your family of that gift.
Mm-hmm. And the same questions that you asked your children, was there anything you didn't get acknowledged for today or recognized for today? And what kind gift did you see? And what kindness did you act? And what did you notice? Is that something you can also do with your colleagues or business associates or friends?
Well, in a slightly different way. So an exercise that I would do with business people is ask your employee, what are you great at? What do you love doing? Is there anything that you've done that you haven't been acknowledged for? I did this amazing project. Everyone just let it go. I thought it was an amazing project. So, people will stay with you, not because of money, because they feel important. They feel that there's a leader in place that is inspiring. So if you can create that feeling for your employees, you will find that their sick leave goes down, they're more productive, they're more happier, they become raving fans. Then all of a sudden you get people knocking on your door wanting to work for you.
Wow, that's very powerful. That's really powerful. And as you talk, Neil, about asking, what are you great at? What did you notice? What did you give? What did you see? What did you do? Beyond the asking, I know that you actually speak a lot about listening. And the power and the art of listening.
Listening is very important because as human beings, we want to be listened to. And if you don't listen, you're depriving everybody of many gifts. So listening is particularly important for men because women want to speak and men have to listen. They don't have to fix things. That's the problem with men. They try and fix things. Women don't want that to be the case. They just want to be listened to. So men, this is the best advice I can give you. Let the one you love, let her speak, listen to her, empathize with her, but don't try and fix anything for her. That will be painful for her. I know you want to. I know you want to jump in, but don't.
You have no idea what wonderful advice that is. That's terrific. Being a woman. Absolutely. And so the show is Unlimited Life, how to leave that unbridled life without any barriers, without any lines, in the same way that there aren't any lines between states. They're only there because we put them there, or we draw them there,
Yes.
But they're imaginary lines. And so are there imaginary lines in our world that we should realize are just imaginary lines? Is there a device or secret or a tool or a technique or a key that you can say, if you just did this one thing, you would expand the boundaries of your life?
Okay, so for example, if you had a swimming pool in your back garden, okay, and then someone pooped in one corner of it. So you swim in the other corner, and then someone else pooped in another corner, then another corner. All of a sudden, you saw 50 little poops, and you're stuck in one corner. Then you think, oh, you know, let me have a look at this, and then you realize that all the poops were plastic.
Okay.
So you've been playing in a smaller pool. You've been playing a smaller game, thinking that you couldn't play the bigger game in the bigger pool. So a lot of the things that stop us are imaginary. We're not good enough. We're not smart enough. There's something wrong with us. We're going to fail. We're not going to succeed. It's all imaginary. As human beings, we're made for one reason, and that's to be love. We are candles that can light up millions of other candles without being diminished. I read somewhere the other day, don't be afraid to love your partner more.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Isn't it?
That truly is. Wow. Don't be afraid to love your partner more. Why do you think, you know, that we are afraid to love more, to love them more? I know that people always tell me that I'm emotionally brave. And at first I was blown away when somebody said that. And now as I look at my life, I say, yes, I am. I'm emotionally brave. I allow myself to feel. I allow myself to think. But what stops us from loving somebody more?
Fear of not having it back, fear of rejection, fear of not being good enough, smart enough, being loved and loved enough in the way we want. So here's some really great advice. If you have a partner in your life, men, ask this to the lady of your life. Honey, what is it I can do to make you feel more loved? And ladies, this is what you can ask your men. What can I do to make you feel more respected? See, generally, men want love. Men want respect above love, and women want love above respect. So if you can throw love in your partner's way, in your lady's partner's way, and respect your men partner's way, your relationship will improve immediately.
This is just amazing advice. It really is. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. And I know that we don't have a lot of time left, but I would love to ask you, as you talk about this, our fears and our foibles or our failures or the things that we trip up on and how we can expand and live and grow and share and trust and have faith. And I remember somewhere that you had some sort of process where people could do like a daily clearance. Was that right? That you had a daily clearance process in which people can... Is that like replenishing? Is that a wave that sweeps over you every day?
Well, you can do the exercise with the round table. That's like a daily clearance. But also you can have as human beings, we have affirmations. And the affirmations that we're used to is that I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good looking, I'm a failure, you know, all of that stuff. Whereas you can replace that with positive affirmations like I am strong, I am powerful, I make a difference, I'm tranquil, I am serene, I am a force for good, I'm here to make a difference, I'm a disciple of God, whatever it is, you can make that stronger. And as you develop that muscle, as you increase those affirmations, magical things will start happening. You'll see things happening. People will come to you. Your vibrational energy changes. Everything that we do is vibrational. As your vibrational energy changes, different people will come into your life. I guarantee that.
And Anil, I just want to go back, since we don't have a lot of time, but I just wanted to go back to 6 years ago for you when you were saying you were in this deep, dark place. And so for those that feel that they're falling into that deep, dark place, before you get there, is there a way to stop it? Or once you're there, when you feel like you can't even breathe, is there one small... You talked about hope, but sometimes I know once you're there, it's really hard to see that light. that you were to say if you or anybody you know or love is ever falling towards the darkness or in the darkness and feeling trapped, that do A, B, or C?
The first thing is go help someone else. Go serve. Feed the homeless. Go do something to serve other people. The second thing is write down on a piece of paper 50 things you can be grateful for. Write down on a piece of paper people that you can be grateful for. Write down on a piece of paper people that you love and that love you. Write down what you're great at, what you love to do. Because that will divert your attention. It will divert your vision, your focus. And once you start serving other people, it becomes addictive because it just fills you up. And the reason it fills you up, because if you meet these three G's, you will be fulfilled. So the first G is you have to give. Give your time, your energy, your love, your commitment, your greatness, your joy, your happiness, your presence, your kindness. Give it away without wanting anything in return. That's the first G. The second G is be grateful for what you have and don't focus on what you don't have. Now, we poop in water that other countries would love to drink out of. Now, do we ever think about that? No, we take it for granted. So there's so many things you can be grateful for, but we haven't developed that muscle. And the third G, if you do this third G, I promise you, life will be totally transformed, is you have to grow. You have to grow emotionally, physically, spiritually, and mentally. So if you're feeling unfulfilled, if you're not feeling joyful, one of those three G's is missing. Either you're not giving, you're not grateful, or you're not growing.
Three G's. It's like now that I start my ABCs, or so do la fa mi do re, right? Once you have these notes, you can sing anything. You just think with these three notes, you can live a happy, fulfilled life.
Absolutely. And it's simple, it's powerful, and it's a universal law. It's a universal law.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a crazy question for you, and so I don't know who is typing this, but I love when questions pop up. So people are asking, when you get like solicitor calls or bill collectors, and when all of a sudden the energy of your day changes, whether you run into somebody who hurt you or you get a phone call that tilts the pot, how do you pull back and get to the other side quickly so you're not falling down the stairs? I guess that's what this question is asking. Yes, that's what I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay. So as human beings, we're meaning-making machines. So something happens, we make it mean something. So, for example, if I call my wife, she doesn't call me back, I make it mean she doesn't love me, she doesn't care for me, she doesn't respect me, she doesn't honor me. All that happened was she didn't call me back. So when you get a debt collector calling you, what do you make it mean? Does it mean that you're stupid, that you're not good enough, you're a failure, this shouldn't be happening, why me? All that's happening is he's calling, he's doing his job. How can you handle it? You can handle it with some love, saying, look, I appreciate you calling. I know you're trying to do your job, but it's a difficult time for me at the moment. Do you mind if I call you back, or can you call back another day? There's no need to get upset. There's no need to give that person power of your life, because ultimately it's your life. You can choose how you live it. You choose how you live it. You choose your life rather than life choosing you.
Yay. I want to stand and cheer for you as you say that. And I remember reading on your bio that you are a Harvard speaker. And so have you spoken at the university to the young minds and students?
Yeah, I was at Harvard University. It's a very a beautiful experience.
And so when you're speaking with the young minds or a consciousness of tomorrow and today, how do you share with kids or young people that are forging roads and they think that they know how to make the future work, that they have a new idea? Yes.
They don't know. That's the thing. See, knowledge is not power. They may have knowledge, but that the power comes in from the fact that how we brought up. You know, my children know the power of happiness, fulfillment, joy, giving, gratitude, because that's the world they've been brought up in. You know that because that's the world you were brought up in with the helping hands. So you've experienced it. There's a difference between love and experiencing love. When you experience love, when you experience fulfillment, when you experience joy, when you experience bliss, it's a beautiful, beautiful moment. And as you experience it, you love it. And as you love it, you want more of it. And then if you know how to get it, you'll get it. But none of us know, none of us have been taught how to get fulfillment. We all think we're seeking happiness, but that is the wrong thing we're seeking. We're not seeking happiness. We're seeking the feeling of fulfillment, joy, and bliss. And now we know how to do it. And once you know how to do it, you can do it.
Just terrific. Absolutely extraordinary. And then I have a question here about pets. I guess pets making us happy or pets that express happiness? I know I have little dogs and they, joy beyond joy. The new day, they dance, they circle, they're happy to see me. As people, can we connect to that kind of feeling?
Yes, and the reason we love our pets is because they don't withhold love from you. They give you undivided love and attention. When you come home and a dog sees you, it's so excited. We don't get that from anywhere else. That's why there's such magical moments, because all of a sudden we're present to love. The dog accepts you as you are.
If we could all be that way in our lives.
Yeah, and it's safe. It's so safe having a dog or a cat, because you know that they're always going to be there for you, always.
And I know that you were sharing at the top of the show that as you were going through this journey, your own personal climb to the other side, or awakening and awareness, and just this incredible eruption of light and love and newfound ways of experiencing being here on this planet, that you were writing down your thoughts or writing down stories and they became a book. How important is it for people to write down their thoughts or to share them in a way that they're not inside?
Well, once you write down the thoughts, you can always come back and review them. I'd like to write magical moments down. So if something magical happens, I'd like to write it down. So then I can come back and say, oh, I remember that. Oh, that was a beautiful moment. That was a beautiful moment. But as human beings, what we do, we stack the bad moments. But here you can stack the great moments. You know, the day your son was born, the day your daughter was born, the graduation day, or I played that tennis match with so-and-so. I went to that island with my wife. So it all depends on the individual. If they like to write things down, they should write it down and make a habit of it, because having everything written down can give you access to genuine feelings that you may not be aware of unless you've actually written them down.
I love that you took time out to be with us today. This is so extraordinary and so special to have you here, and your work is luscious. It's so divine. It's like running through a field of flowers. I feel like when a cartwheel through your work. It's just like you're just this big, glorious hill, and you just want to have this glee and be dancing around excited to be able to say, I'm an expert on happiness. What is it like just even to be able to say that and to lead a life where you're an expert on something just so beautiful and glorious?
Yeah, you know, I don't even think about it. It just is. You know, it's a calling, it's a mission, it's a passion. So it just is.
And is there ever a scenario where you just say, okay, it's okay to stay in that dark place for a while? It's okay to wallow. It's okay to break down. And then when you're ready, you know, we'll talk about the other side. Or is it always a time when you can say, I'm just going to, in this moment, even in the saddest or deepest or dimmest places of my life, just breathe and be grateful and see that light and know it's there. What do you say for people that are grieving or people that are sick or people that are in situations in which that emotion is just so strong and that cord is so deep?
Well, you know, I have my moments. There are times I'm really quite sad, but I don't live in that world. And it's okay to be there. So if you imagine a kid, it falls down, it's immediately sad and it starts crying. But it really enjoys that moment because it's in that moment, but then it disappears. So if you're in sadness, you're in pain, it's okay. It's not a problem. Don't resist it. Just be with it. But don't live in that world, because if you live in that world, it's not going to be fulfilling for you. It's not going to be joyous for you. So think of ways that you can get out of it by just doing one of the exercises about gratitude, having that awareness, spending time with other people, serving other people. And then as you do that, you'll start to shift where you are, and then you'll become a different person. And all of a sudden, the fact that you're not resisting the sad part of your life, all of a sudden it's gone because you don't give it any attention.
Just wonderful work, Anil. It's so beautiful. It's so special. And for everybody that's out there, to be able to find you, to work with you, to find their happiness meter, I absolutely love that. And to be able to grow and step into places in our life where we can be happier, where we can change it. I love when you talk about the partnership. If your partner's score is lower than yours, your score is lower than your partner's, and how as a team you work together to pull those up. Do you think that it's ever surprising that somebody turns to their spouse and say, wow, I didn't realize you were unhappy in that area of your life?
Well, it happened to me. My wife did hers. I did mine. My son and daughter did. We did them all, and we put them all together. And I said to my wife, honey, I didn't know you felt that way. She said, yeah, I do. And I said, oh, great. Okay, let's fix it. So even though I'm in this world, we don't always know what's going in other people's minds. So this brings that clarity that you may not have. It asks you questions that you may not answer. It'll give you a direction that you can go in to fix any issues. So when we put all four of them together, we could address something because we had a lot more clarity.
So one of our listeners is a very powerful leader in our country, in our nation. And I've been very grateful because he's been an avid listener to all of my shows for several years now. And I didn't even realize that he was listening in when you were on the Passionate Living show. And I received a message shortly after the show saying, thank you so much. That was a wonderful show, and acknowledged you and all of your work. And then the last line said, I'm going to go take my, you know, happiness test or happiness meter, whatever that is right now, and, you know, wishing you a wonderful night. And it was so funny because that the very next thing that he wanted to do was to go and to find out where he was happy in his life and where he could improve on that. And this is someone that's very powerful, making a difference in all of our lives. And so I love the fact that at any point we can take this test and we can move up on that happiness meter.
Yeah, and you know, once you get the test back, it gives you a full breakdown on areas of your life that you can work on. And once you do that, it really does make an impact so that you can have that clarity and awareness of the areas that really need looking at.
Well, I'm so grateful that you're with us. And please share with our audience how they can have their very own copy of Immediate Happiness, Be Happy Now. How did they find the book?
If you just go on Amazon and put in Immediate Happiness, it's available as a paperback. It's available in Kindle format, and it's available in Spanish too. It really is a manual. It's practical. It teaches you ways that you can increase the quality, depth, and the level of awareness and happiness, joy, and fulfillment in your life. It's a very, very easy read. The chapters are written from the heart. They're practical. They're the things I use in my seminars that I've held out over the world. It's a proven technology, and it all leads up to the final chapter. The final chapter is on forgiveness. So we take you on a journey. We teach you how human beings work. So, Nicole, example, if you bought a brand new Tesla and it broke down, you'd have very little knowledge on how to fix it. But if you'd spent time learning how the Tesla worked, you'd be in a better place to fix it. So as we become more knowledgeable about how human beings work, if you ever have an issue, we're able to fix it, saying, oh, you know what, I make it mean this, the reality is this, I can do this, and I'm done. It's very powerful.
I love the Tesla analogy. I would love a Tesla. Okay.
Yeah, me too. Anyone listening out there?
So anybody that knows when it's your birthday, we're going to make sure that our audience, you know, it's so funny. I had one of our guests that was on, and I'll share this with our audience because it was so beautiful. But one of our guests that was on one of my other shows, we were talking about harmony in a relationship, beautiful harmony in a relationship. And I was sharing a story about how I had this beautiful piano, this incredible piano that I fell in love with in Manhattan, and that I had the piano shipped out to California, and how I took care of this piano as if it was one of my children. I just absolutely adored this piano. And when I was moving, I had a sale in my home, and one of the neighbors came by, and they had a little girl who was maybe 6, 7, 8, and she saw the piano, and she yelled out, "Piano," and she ran towards it, and the mother asked if she could play a song, and I said, "Of course," and she climbed on the bench, and she played like she was Bach, like she was Beethoven, like, I mean, just the most incredible virtuoso piano that I've ever heard in my life. And I asked, you know, how long she'd been playing, and the mother said she had never taken a lesson, ever, that she just loved the music, and that there was an old beat-up piano in the gym at school, and that sometimes she would sneak in and just play it, but that they couldn't afford a piano. And, you know, I asked if they had wanted this, and they said that they couldn't possibly, you know, afford this piano. And I said that, no, that I would give them this piano for the price of, you know, a ticket someday when she becomes a concert pianist, that they would remember me and find me and invite me to one of her shows.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew this little girl had talent. And
wow.
I even had paid to have my movers move it to their house because I know they couldn't afford to do that and to have it tuned. And I just knew in that moment that that piano belonged to that little girl. And I was sharing that someday I knew that another piano would come back to me. I just hadn't procured one, but that the right one would arrive and show up in my life one day. And a couple months ago, they were so moved by the story. Somebody that had heard the story actually gifted me an antique piano that I have now that I cannot tell you how much I love. And
wow.
So you don't know. So when is your birthday, Anil? Tesla?
July the 7th, everybody.
Because your work just is, it changes people's lives. And somebody may say, look, you know, he needs this as a demo for his speeches to share this information. Absolutely. And it's wonderful having you here. It's always such a joy. And truly, I am such a fan of your work. And I am so grateful for you and your wisdom and your knowledge and the kindness that you instill and that lives inside of you, and not just for everything that you know, but the way you share it so freely, so generously, just with so much heart to so many people around the world. You really are such a grand gift, and I am so grateful to know you.
No, thank you so much. I love the passion. I love the difference that you make, and you know, your energy, your vibrancy, who you're being is truly beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you, Anil. So, Anil Gupta, immediate happiness, be happy now, or go to www.myhappinessscore.com. I know everybody's going to be racing to do that. I wish you could see all these questions. People just are so excited and absolutely love this work as much as I do. And we look forward to having you back here on the show. And I wish you the most incredibly wonderful and special new year, and thank you for all your work. Anil Gupta and immediate happiness. Wow, what beautiful information. He's truly astounding, absolutely astounding. if we could all be happy in an instant. And his three G's, and I love the way that he talks about giving. And I love the way that he talks about growing. And all of these things that when you're in your deepest, darkest place, when you're in a place where you feel the walls are closing in and there isn't any hope, go feed the hungry. Go do some small act of kindness for someone and make a difference and get outside yourself. I thought that was amazing advice. So much of what he said was just, everything was just right on. I love the way that he talks to his kids. You know, what were you not acknowledged for today? What did you notice? What act of kindness did you see? What act of kindness did you give? What do you appreciate? All of these things that he's been able to open his children's eyes to a world of living in such a way. Or for a woman, how can I love you better? A man, how can I respect you more? And what can I do in this relationship? And so all of these tools and techniques and keys and secrets that he gifted us with today, each and every one, is a step to living that ultimate happy life. And so I so look forward to having you back here with us next week, finding Neil Gupta and his work. It's amazing. It's extraordinary. And in less than 3 minutes, you can be on the road to happiness. Share this work with your partners, your loved ones, your life. But mostly, know that I wish you truly an unlimited life. And so this is Nicole Brandon and Anil Gupta wishing you immediate happiness and the unlimited life that you always knew you were meant to live, that you dream of, you desire and deserve, knowing that you have it inside your heart to live and to have it all. We look forward to seeing you next week.